Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 26th day of February, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and several days now into what probably amounts to World War III, but arguably when the Chinese invade Taiwan, I guess we'll know for sure. And since it's pretty much impossible anyway to start anywhere else when you wrap up a week like this one, let's go there right off the bat. And I do have to start by giving credit where it's due. The Biden regime has achieved their single most important foreign policy objective and outright success. After an extended period of poking the bear, Putin finally responded this morning and invaded Ukraine at about 5 a.m. their time, massively and overwhelmingly. Thankfully, so far at least, no nuclear first strike by Russia on the United States, no mushroom clouds, no tsunamis over the east or west coasts. As for what are the more likely forms of retaliation, like cyber attacks and or a strike at the vulnerable financial system, we'll have to wait and see. But one thing's for certain, the situation the deep state puppets have been pushing so hard to achieve is here. So with the proviso up front, the truth is always the first casualty of war. Here's what we know so far, and as of the time I'm doing this recording. I've got several sources here, but I'll start with what looks like one of the better ones, courtesy of the War Room at TheDrive.com and Tyler Rogoway, who wrote it around 5 a.m. on Thursday the 24th local time. After a fiery speech, Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered a special military operation in Ukraine's contested Donbas region. And just as expected, the actual military operation that commenced had elements that occurred far outside of that region itself, as Russian forces launched opening standoff missile attacks on command and control facilities, air defense sites, air bases, and other key targets in a move to blunt Ukraine's ability to defend itself, or have others defend it, and shatter its command and control capabilities. The widespread use of land attack cruise missiles was especially clear, along with long-range anti-radiation missiles used to knock out radar sites. Special operations also appear to have played a major part in these opening maneuvers that were largely focused on, quote, shaping the battlefield for what is still to come. Meanwhile, it appears that a multi-pronged ground offensive emanating from Ukraine's northeastern border with Russia, as well as from the south with Crimea and north from Belarus, is still at its beginning stages. There is worry that such a multi-dimensional attack could trap Ukrainian forces concentrated in the east, severing their supply lines from the west and leaving the capital of Kiev vulnerable to being sacked from the north. And amphibious operations, too, are still very much a real possibility as well, with Odessa and Mariupol being the prime targets. Regardless, as things stand now, by every indication, says this piece, it appears that the scale of the Russian invasion operation is among the largest that were feared. And to some extent, folks, I can't help but think maybe this again points to the ineptitude of those that were poking the bear. Because it seemed to your host, at least, that if Putin was going to do it, he was going to do it decisively or not at all. Maybe that's the difference between chess playing and senility. And by the time we got to the weekend, most of that seemed to be playing out right in accord with Putin's plans. The coverage from the Daily Mail in the UK says that Russia today launched their all-out war on Ukraine with simultaneous attacks coming from the south, east, and north by land and by air. As missiles and bombs rained from the sky, tanks rolled across the border, helicopters buzzed in the air, and explosions were seen across the country after Vladimir Putin finally gave the order to attack. And by Thursday afternoon, Ukrainian forces were fighting in almost every region of the country, said the police service, for control of military bases, airports, and cities after an early hours barrage of cruise missiles and guided bombs targeted ammo dumps and radar arrays across the entire country. And by Thursday afternoon, battles were ongoing in the capital of Kiev, along the northern border with Belarus, and in Luhansk and Donetsk in the east, and around Kherson and the Dnieper River in the south. The headline says there are now even Russian helicopters above Ukraine's capital. Zero Hedge's summary coverage and updates add that not many hours into the attack, it's clear that a full-scale shock and awe-style campaign is on. And it's not just limited to Donbas in the east. Stunning videos on the ground show what could be described as an ongoing air war on Kiev and in several other cities across the country. Tanks are spreading across Ukraine's border from Belarus, with widespread reports that Belarusian soldiers are mounting the attack alongside Russian troops. And within hours of the offensive, Russia's military announced that all of Ukraine's air defense systems have been taken out, and a massive Russian aerial presence, including fighter jets and helicopters, has been confirmed over much of the country. Authorities have cited that hundreds of Ukrainians have already been killed, including, they say, civilians. And while it's believed that much of Ukraine's command and control military infrastructure was targeted and hit in the first wave, as well as Ukrainian border guards, there are widespread reports of soldiers fleeing in the face of the Russian advance. And Moscow has declared safe passage for any Ukrainian soldiers laying down their arms. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov on Thursday issued his comment on the scope and goal of the military operations, citing that Putin's aim was, quote, the demilitarization and denazification of Ukraine. Quote, ideally, Ukraine should be liberated, cleansed of Nazis, of pro-Nazi people and ideology, he said, adding that operations would end only once those objectives had been achieved. It remains unclear, though, says Zero Hedge, whether that will mean regime change in Kiev, although at this point, that scenario seems more than likely. And there even are early reports that President Zelensky had been offered safe passage if he leaves Ukraine. As might be expected, the knee-jerk waste-stream media is describing this as, quote, Europe's worst security crisis since World War II. They've been jonesing for it for a long time now, so why not? Unelected President von der Leyen of the European Union has chimed in with his blunt words about the Russian attack, saying we won't let Putin tear down the security architecture that's given Europe peace and stability over the past decades. Wonder if he's talking about before or after they started putting missiles on Russia's border. We will not allow President Putin, he said, to replace the rule of law with the rule of force and ruthlessness, and he should not underestimate the resolve and strength of our democracies, unquote. And you got to ask, where was he when the dictator of Canada, Justin Castro Trudeau, replaced the rule of law with ruthlessness and anti-democratic tyranny? And I guess we couldn't call the coverage complete without at least scoffing at the psychopathic headline from the New York Times. Ukraine, it says, is under full-scale attack, and the Pentagon gives grim assessment of Russian invasion. Oh, but here's what they're focused on. Biden to address the nation. Oh, yeah. I bet the world is holding its breath to see whether or not the senile sippy cup guy can read his teleprompter correctly or not. If people weren't worried before, that ought to have them quaking in their boots. The swamp is even gleefully trotting out the likes of America's worst living example of a papier-mâché bobblehead failed presidential candidate. Mitt Romney released a statement on Twitter last night after the invasion, blaming what else? The short-sightedness of President Donald Trump's policy of America First. Oh, yeah. He doesn't seem to ask why they decided to wait so long before actually unleashing their invasion, nor why it was that Vladimir Putin, after the election in 2016, observed that had Hitler, in fact, been able to pull off the steal then, they would have nuked America with the first strike, because they knew then what would have been coming. For his part, Donald Trump, appearing with host Laura Ingraham on Fox News, after being told that Biden was monitoring the situation and would speak with G7 leaders sometime later Thursday, slammed the marionette in Xi's slow response, saying, quote, I don't think he's monitoring. I think he's probably sleeping right now. Adding, this should never have happened. It wouldn't have happened during my administration. And he noted that people have been asking, why didn't this take place during the last 4 years? But it's a sad thing for the world, he said, and the country, and that a lot of people will be needlessly killed. And he's not alone in suggesting that Putin recognizes the obvious weaknesses of the United States military, revealed in the way they dealt with the debacle in Afghanistan. Quote, I really believe that's where he started thinking he could do this, unquote. And after watching the United States abandon thousands of its own people there, folks, and give the terrorist enemy literally tens of billions of dollars of advanced U.S. military hardware, who could honestly disagree with any assessment along those lines?
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
And with all the smoke and fury surrounding the invasion that took oh so long to provoke, a headline like this one could easily be overlooked. But I think it's more significant than the waste-stream press is going to admit, at least until it's time to unleash a bit more on the subject. This comes from an update at just after 10:11 a.m. Eastern Time from Zero Hedge, which says that the potential is rising for even greater fallout, pun intended, from the war across Europe, as intense fighting is now being reported centered in the area of Chernobyl. Yeah, remember that? Remember the famous meltdown in April 1986? Ukrainian authorities are sounding the alarm over potentially disastrous scenarios which could ensue in areas surrounding Chernobyl and the containment zone, which includes an expansive region surrounding the nuclear power plant where radioactive contamination is highest since the 1986 disaster. And Russian troops are reportedly entering the area from the north, from Belarus, according to Interfax. Puppet President Zelensky says the story has reportedly sounded the alarm over combat in the containment area, warning that Russian occupation forces are trying to capture the Chernobyl plant. While other officials in the Ukraine warned ominously that if a nuclear waste storage facility there is destroyed as a result of an enemy artillery strike, then radioactive dust could cover the territories of Ukraine, Belarus, and various parts of the EU, unquote. Full stop. And just how stupid do they think people are? Notice what's missing? Yeah, what's just east of there? In other words, downwind. Answer, Mother Russia. The same country that ultimately spent billions to encase that nuclear power plant in concrete and other forms of containment so that it wouldn't contaminate Russia or anywhere else worse than it already had 3 decades ago. Let's be clear here, folks. Arguably, they did a hell of a lot better job after Chernobyl than Japan did after Fukushima. And that's still the case. So do you really think anybody in Russia really wants to release what they spent so much time and effort trying to contain? Or is it just possible maybe they're worried about a false flag and figured one of the first things they had better do is go in there and secure that nuclear power plant and waste zone so that nobody else can do exactly what the propaganda press seems to be preparing the populace to swallow? I guess if I was a satanic minion looking to further paint Russia, Russia, Russia as the bad guys, at least since 2016 or so, that we really need a good excuse to go to nuclear war against, if somebody did manage to open up that containment area and then spread nuclear waste all over Russia, how much better if those that done it could blame them for it? Let me say it again, folks. Putin may in fact be a really nasty guy, but he's not stupid, much less senile, and I can't help but think that the chess player saw that move coming. Don't be fooled. And by the way, as we rolled into the weekend, the IAEA and Ukraine's nuclear energy officials continue to fan the flames about the situation there, claiming that unidentified armed forces had taken control of Chernobyl, but, quote, there have been no casualties nor destruction at the industrial site, but still, they're watching very carefully. Oh, and likewise, I gotta wonder, because I haven't seen any mention of this in just about any of the coverage, what do you bet one of the very first early targets of the Russian offensive was to take out those missiles, threatening not only their capital and major cities, but their domestic defense infrastructure as well, that inspired them to make this attack in the first place? I really gotta wonder if the U.S. press will even talk about that. Shifting gears now, but only slightly, there's other obvious fallout from the attack overnight as well. Joe Hoft and the Gateway Pundit have video from the first hours of the Russian invasion of Ukraine on a number of fronts. But what's particularly dramatic is video from the early hours of the invasion into the Ukraine, showing bombings and gunfire and explosions and downed planes. But, just as interesting, a massive exodus from Ukraine's capital city of Kiev. It's literally bumper to bumper and backed up as far as the eye can see. A massive traffic jam, says coverage, as people tried to get out of the capital city as quickly and safely as they possibly could. On then next to what is arguably the real point of this entire exercise. Economics, finance, and yeah, fall of the money, or nowadays we'd have to say fall of the currency, masquerading as fake money. And given that America is literally on the doorstep of the largest economic collapse, probably in world history, because we certainly have the biggest debt bubble and the most massive fiat money printing operation ever, and they always end the same way, it's been clear for years now that the economic meltdown needed an equally big world war, or something similar anyway, maybe a massive die-off would do as well, to distract the masses and provide the necessary cover for the supply chain breakdown, currency collapse, economic depression, and ultimately famine, along with it the greatest transfer of wealth in history to boot, that people need to be convinced to blame on something, anything else other than the actual cause. Dishonest weights and measures, or dishonest money, the Federal Reserve, and the corresponding destruction of America's entire once free enterprise economic system. And we got yet another glimpse at what that's going to look like shortly after the attacks began as well. And as you might expect, there's a whole lot going on, so let's try to put it into some perspective, more or less chronologically, and with primarily some headlines. First, from the stock markets, where U.S. stock index futures, says Zero Hedge's summary, midday Thursday, crashed along with global markets as Russia's assault on Ukraine sent investors fleeing risk assets. The tech-heavy Nasdaq was set to open in a bear market. Contracts on the Nasdaq 100 were down almost 3% by 7 a.m. in New York, having dropped as much as 3.6% earlier, and signaling that the underlying gauge was poised to fall a full 20% from its November record high for the first time since the pandemic. The S&P 500 was down 98 points, 2.23%, while Dow futures also lost about 2.3%, and the flight to safety, as it's being called, saw the 10-year Treasury yield tumble 14 basis points to around 1.9%, while gold hit its highest since September 2020. And along with silver, both paper precious metals were up over 2% this morning. That's almost 75 cents in the case of paper silver. But before long, the plunge protection team had things well in hand. They've certainly demonstrated that while they can't handle inflation, they can manage to keep hiding it for a little while longer. Here's a very brief headline courtesy of Zero Hedge from the Market Ear entitled Early Observations on Invasion Day. I like the summary. Pure panic. And oh yeah, it notes Russia, Russia, Russian experts that had little clue where Donetsk even was on the map just a few weeks ago are now explaining the effects of the Russian-Ukraine situation and how bad it is for Europe. And I guess you could argue this is a related story. European natural gas has jumped 60% as the first day of European turmoil unfolded. And a later update adds that conflict in Ukraine continues to send European energy prices higher on Thursday. Dutch TTF gas futures are up a staggering 60%, their greatest rise since 2005, and their fourth consecutive daily gain. German power contracts for the month of March soared as much as 42%, crude was up too, and Brent futures traded as high as $105 a barrel. While U.S. natural gas prices too rose in sympathy as potential export demand is now being priced in. But wait, by Friday there was this headline, and people were scratching their heads about it, because it looked like Putin, after securing Ukraine, may have turned the gas back on. Take a seat for this one. On Friday, Dutch TTF gas prices plunged, after rising the day before, as much as 28%, on new data supplied by Bloomberg via Gazprom that showed natural gas flow rates from Russia through Ukraine and into Europe jumped almost 38% later Thursday, and were expected to rise another 25% on Friday. Russia turned the heat back on for Europe. That's because the deals are priced in such a way that Russian imports are now cheaper than spot gas traded at European hubs. Almost sounds like a page out of Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Gazprom reiterated that natural gas flows via Ukraine are now running as normal and will increase upon client request. From the home of funny money and the global reserve currency, on Thursday the Fed postponed the day's purchase of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities due to what are called technical difficulties. And while it's not the first time, says Tyler Durden for Zero Hedge, that the New York Fed has experienced a major technical glitch preventing it from executing its daily open market purchase of treasuries and MBS securities, the Fed sure could have picked a better day for their printer to jam. Maybe it's nothing, folks, or maybe it's an indication that we can look forward to more technical difficulties in the days ahead. Zero Hedge, too, suggests there might be more going on here than meets the eye, since the Fed was scheduled to purchase $6.25 billion in TSYs, and that was the largest single-day purchase during the final, at least we're told, month of quantitative easing, almost like the Fed is doing all it can to further destabilize the already shaky mood in the markets. Maybe, they say, they've read Zoltan Posar's latest note, in which he suggests the Fed needs to crash the market in order to contain inflation. All right, more quick headlines. U.S. new home sales tumble in January as mortgage rates soar. I gotta ask it, who wants to buy a house in this environment anyway, especially in the suburbs or one of the major cesspool city areas, when they're coming apart at the seams? Ukraine default risk explodes, says another. Russian foreign exchange and stocks have been routed as intervention there fails. From Ms. Shedlock, who's got a pretty good track record, most people, he writes today, and he backs it up with lots of charts and graphs as usual, just have no idea how much stocks are likely to crash. And he in turn points to what he calls half-century value investing icon Jeremy Grantham, who's been calling market bubbles for decades and now says U.S. stocks are in a super bubble, only the fourth in history, and literally poised to collapse. Maybe this is the pin that does it. He, of course, likes the precious metals as insurance against what's coming, and now here. Which prompts your host to note that while the ineptitude of the current illegitimate regime in the deep state swamp is now beyond undeniable, there is one thing at least that the market manipulators still seem to be good at. They put a lid, at least for now, on the price rise in paper, gold, and silver. You already know how they did it. You can sell as much as you want if you don't have to worry about delivering it. So only a few hours after the long-anticipated invasion commenced, and gold and silver were both up over 2%. Whoa, wait a minute. Somebody put a lid on that, sold a whole bunch of paper contracts in the crooked casinos, and by the time they closed, what had been up big time, at least on paper, was down big time, and they continued to try to push them down again on Friday. In a way, it was kind of like a fire sale on everything you need economically to survive what they've got planned. Only trouble is, the real stuff, in the case of silver, is still selling for about $6 an ounce over the bogus paper price. Oh, and briefly, because I don't intend to spend any more time on it than it deserves, which is basically nothing, the Biden Führer's had his pampers checked, the teleprompter was ready to go, and he read the prepared notes from his handlers. See if you can stomach this.
I know this is hard, and that Americans are already hurting.
Oh, yeah, but when it comes to the pain he's got planned, folks, you ain't felt nothing yet.
I will do everything in my power to limit the pain the American people are feeling at the gas pump. This is critical to me.
That's why the very first thing I did once I stole the election was to shut down pipelines and destroy critical fuel infrastructure.
But this aggression cannot go unanswered. If it did, the consequences for America would be much worse. America stands up to bullies. We stand up for freedom. This is who we are.
If that was even remotely true, folks, it begs the obvious question. What the hell are you doing anywhere close, then, to the Oval Orifice? Let me say it again, because the news is saying it today. If you're not mad yet, you don't have a clue what's coming next. There were some other eyebrow raisers he was told to read off the teleprompter, too. He's imposing strong sanctions and new limits on Russia, although at least nobody was stupid enough yet to say we're kicking Russia out of SWIFT. And in case you're curious, the marionette-in-chief promised that U.S. forces will not fight in Ukraine. Yeah, remember other lies like that? He kept us out of war and peace in our time. Well, it's true. He doesn't bother to fight for the U.S. border, so why waste lives on Ukraine? But maybe it's also true that he intends to wait until Russia has completely recaptured the area. Then it's not Ukraine anymore. By then, it'll be a bit closer to the election, too, so we'll no doubt see what happens then. Although the Pentagon did announce they're deploying another 7,000 fully vaxxed suicidal pawns to Europe. And honestly, folks, I didn't intend to play any more of this insult to people's intelligence, but sometimes you just plain have to know how bad things have already gotten. So here goes. This is from what now passes for a press conference, following that bit of theatrical, let's play president. And although you can't see the video, note how he's careful to read the notes from his handler, so he makes sure he calls on the right softball pitcher.
Wall Street Journal, Tarina.
Mr. President, you didn't mention SWIFT in your sanctions that you announced. Is there a reason why the U.S. Isn't doing that? Is there a disagreement among allies regarding SWIFT and whether Russia should be allowed to be a part of it?
The sanctions that we have proposed on all their banks have an equal consequence, maybe more consequence than SWIFT number one.
Come on, what a lying cretin. The truth is, folks, they don't want to destroy the U.S. economy completely before the election, because that'd be beyond their ability to rig. And besides, what's the point of starting a war if people figure out what it was supposed to hide?
Number two, it is always an option, but right now that's not the position that the rest of Europe wishes to take.
Oh, yeah, and even though they've been doing a lot of stupid things lately, Germany doesn't want to freeze either. And we've already talked about how that was paying dividends before the week was even up. Let's see if I can read the list here.
Cecilia Vega, ABC.
Sir, sanctions clearly have not been enough to deter Vladimir Putin to this point. What is going to stop him? How and when does this end? And do you see him trying to go beyond Ukraine? And a second question I'll just give to you now. This statement that he gave last night, the West will face consequences greater than any you have faced in history. Is he threatening a nuclear strike?
I have no idea what he's threatening.
He has no idea if he's pooped his diapers, number one. But the real point is, he ought to, because that's exactly what Putin's been threatening, and he has the means to do it as well. Folks, this is downright shameful, not to mention suicidal. What an idiot! What a senile cretin!
I have no idea what he's threatening. I know what he has done, number one. And number two, no one expected the sanctions to prevent anything from happening.
Did you catch that? A rare bit of truth actually breaking out. The sanctions were a provocation. They were supposed to poke the bear. And he poked him and poked him and poked him and finally got the desired response. And before the day was out, the fallout from that one was so bad that Jen Psaki had to say, oh, Biden didn't actually mean that. That's why we give him a teleprompter, for crying out loud, and a list telling him who to call on, and why, normally, we have the mic cutoff button there, but I guess we were a bit slow on the uptake this time. And what really ought to be hitting home with people is, I wish I was only kidding. No, this is not a drill. Sadly, this is not a joke. And we'll be right back. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I am still your host, Mark Call, and we're still talking about some other things that happened earlier in the week, arguably every bit as important, because part of the reason for World War III is to cover them up so they can get away with them and blame World War III for the consequences of all the other nasty stuff that's been going on for so long. And at this point, we will pick up chronologically with some ugly stuff that happened last weekend in our once friendly neighbor to the north, which continues to demonstrate to Americans what lies ahead if they fail to respond and quickly to the rising tyranny there, which is not only trampling their rights and freedoms and what was left of their rule of law, but literally truckers, protesters, and old women now as well. And if you haven't seen the video of that one by now from over the weekend, you should. It's another graphic demonstration of not only the evil that's been unleashed, but why it is that Big Brother Canada is so anxious to make sure that nobody is allowed to cover what's really being done there in what are being called more and more aspects of China's very own Tiananmen Square. The video of that one, and even a still photo of the carnage from above, has gone viral on the web. There were reports that the injured woman, who used a mobility device, some call it a walker, either died later or walked away uninjured. Take your pick on the spin. When I tried to follow up Monday morning, folks, I actually didn't find much that I put any faith in anyway, other than bald-faced attempts to spin the story after the fact. Like, the trampling was fictitious. Pay no attention to those videos. The Ottawa jackbooted thugs, and yeah, you can see the host's opinion there, released their own statement on Twitter, assuring the public that there was nothing to see here. Move along, move along. Quote, we hear your concern for people on the ground after the horses dispersed a crowd. Anyone who fell, got up, and walked away were unaware of any injuries. And I guess by that they mean, well, we could care less anyway, or we wouldn't have sent the horses in there to trample them in the first place. A bicycle was thrown at a horse further down the road, though. They said, ooh, and that was serious. It caused the horse to trip, but thankfully the horse was uninjured. Turns out we found out a day or two later that the woman did end up in the hospital for a shoulder injury as a result of the trampling. And we had more from the Maple Leaf Reich earlier in the week as well. Writes J.D. Hayes for Natural News, we're seeing some very familiar police state tactics. In addition to using animals, and in this case war horses, to push back and trample demonstrators, Canadian police, sick, have also adopted the familiar Gestapo tactic of hiding their identities by covering their names and badge numbers, as any number of protesters have noted online. And note, he says, that Prime Minister Justin Fidel Castro Trudeau's response to the Freedom Convoy truckers is 180 degrees opposite of how the same guy responded to communist violence from Antifa and Black Lives Matter after George Floyd's death back in May 2020. While demonstrators during that period were ordered dispersed after actually committing real violence, smashing windows and setting fires, the protests continued, and Trudeau never once thought about invoking the Emergency Act, as he did last week, to deal with people that this time around he called fringe and actually likened to Nazis, ignoring the far greater obvious connections to those who were his ideological comrades. The other video, though, that went viral from over the weekend came from the floor of the Canadian Parliament, where an MP who dared to point out who was obviously and really running the show was immediately and undeniably silenced. Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge introduced their coverage of the revelation this way. Last month, footage from the World Economic Forum dating back to 2017, Unt their head, Klaus Schwab, resurfaced, in which he boasts of having penetrated, and there's an appropriate term, various governments throughout the world via their Young Global Leaders program. I guess you could call him the Great Reset Jungen, in which he admitted that the WEF, best known for their annual gathering of the incredibly hypocritical global elite in Davos, oh yeah, your carbon footprint is causing a problem, but their massive carbon bootprint certainly doesn't, And they've been openly pushing for digital IDs and vaccine passports ever since, while the puppet leaders of those governments continue to impose their Orwellian vaccine mandates and have resulted in widespread protests for, well, among other things, medical freedom. Here's how the world's number one living fascist put it then.
And I have to say, when I mention our names like this Merkel, even Vladimir Putin and so on, they all have been young global leaders of the World Economic Forum. Mm-hmm. But what we are very proud of now, the young generation, like Prime Minister Trudeau, President of Argentina and so on, that we penetrate the cabinets. So yesterday I was at a reception for Prime Minister Trudeau, and I know that half of this cabinet, or even more, half of this cabinet are actually young global leaders of the World Economic Forum.
Und ja, we have penetrated the cabinet of Trudeau, und we own them. Which really helps to explain what the Canadian people actually saw when they were watching what they thought was their parliament over the weekend. This, then, is Canadian Member of Parliament Colin Carey, who was cut off when he dared to ask about the influence of the aforementioned Klaus Schwab and his WEF in Canadian politics.
The Honourable Member for Oshawa.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I listened to my colleague's speech. I had a constituent that wanted me to ask a question about outside interference to our democracy. Klaus Schwab is the head of the World Economic Forum, and he bragged how his subversive WEF, World Economic Forum, has, quoted, infiltrated governments around the world. He said that his organization had penetrated more than half of Canada's cabinet. And I was wondering, in the interest of transparency, could the member please name which cabinet ministers are on board with the WEF's agenda? My concern is the deputy.
Order. I know he was. I know the member was in a really good question there, but the audio is really, really bad, and the video is really, really bad as well.
There's a bald-faced lie for you. The audio didn't get bad until they cut off his mic because he was saying something he wasn't supposed to say. So let's hear that question again. They don't want you to.
Question about outside interference to our democracy. Klaus Schwab is the head of the World Economic Forum, and he bragged how his subversive WEF, World Economic Forum, has, quoted, infiltrated governments around the world. He said that his organization had penetrated more than half of Canada's cabinet. And I was wondering, in the interest of transparency, could the member please name which cabinet ministers are on board with the WEF's agenda? My concern is the deputy.
Order. I know he was. I know the member was in a really good question there, but
no, we're not about, especially now, to start allowing transparency.
And I apologize. I don't know if the member. Okay, let's try again. The honourable member for Timmins James Bay.
Mr. Speaker, that member was promoting open disinformation. That's not debate. We have to call out disinformation.
We'll get into debate again. The Honourable Member, questions and comments, the Honourable Member for Lambton, Kent Middlesex.
And yeah, I guess from here on out, we'll expect all the other members to have learned their lesson from that. But I guess if nothing else, we at least now know two of the names of the sellouts that have been penetrated by Klaus Schwab and are on his public-private partnership Global Reset team. And it's a fallout from this, approaching the level of even the tyranny itself, that may really put a wooden stake in what's left of once free Canada. C.J. Hopkins, via the Consent Factory, called it the naked face of the new normal fascism, saying, I told you this wasn't going to be pretty, because the collapse of fascist ideological movements and fanatical death cults never is. The new normal is proving to be no exception. After 3 weeks of nonviolent civil disobedience outside the Canadian Parliament in Ottawa by truckers and other Canadian citizens struggling to uphold their right not to be subjected to forced death by lethal injection, aka vaccination that really isn't vaccination at all, much less even remotely health-related, except, of course, in the evil is being called good upside-down sense, Justin Castro Trudeau has now unleashed the goon squads. Thousands of militarized riot police and other unidentified heavily armed operatives, remember, the Canadian people have been disarmed for quite a while now, swarmed the area, surrounded the protesters, and then started breaking into trucks and arresting people. They're up to almost 200 now, beating them with batons and the butts of their rifles. And of course, in what he calls one particularly ugly episode, the new normal stormtroopers rode their war horses directly into a crowd of nonviolent protesters and trampled an elderly lady with her walker. She just finished saying something to the police along the lines of, "You break my heart. This is about peace and love and happiness." So they knocked her down and rode their horses over her. And as I've already talked about, despite the abundance of video evidence clearly depicting what happened, the Ottawa police are still trying to spin it. And even though the Canadian people are no doubt used to being lied to by now, they may not yet be used to the idea of a jackboot stomping their human faces forever, a la Orwell. C.J. Hopkins even points out that the lady's walker may have been the aforementioned horse-assaulting bicycle. How dare she cause that horse to trip? But that wasn't all of it. The show of force was just getting started. Maybe because this wasn't, after all, a mostly peaceful outbreak of rioting, looting, rape, and arson. Hey, think about it this way, folks. Unlike Antifa and BLM riots all over the place last year, not a single police precinct has been firebombed, not a single store has been looted. Although there were a few bouncy castles and some honking going on, as well as some street dancing and maybe illegal barbecuing. In other words, what the Castro of the North calls terrorist activity that needs to be crushed with an iron fist. Well, at least World War III eventually focused the media attention elsewhere. Maybe people will forget all about it and let it cool off a bit, and then we'll have more tyranny as usual a little bit further down the line. Next, I want to connect a few dots in a different direction, but unfortunately, perhaps with the same endpoint, from Dr. Joseph Mercola, also via Lou Rockwell, who asks, what's behind the new AIDS scare? When the media, he begins, starts to raise an issue all at the same time, it's usually a coordinated campaign directed by, well, either Big Brother and his partners or a PR company on behalf of a client. There's a reason for it, and that reason is usually to sow a desired narrative in the minds of people. They plant the ideas up front so that when the something that they plan on having happen happens, people are already prepped with the correct prejudices or assumptions. So he asks, what might then be the reason for everyone suddenly starting to talk about AIDS? Back in December 2021, the senile one, Joe Biden, announced a White House plan to, quote, end the HIV/AIDS epidemic by 2030. And amazingly, that same exact vow had been announced by the British Health Sick Security Agency just a week earlier. Meanwhile, Prince Harry was out there urging everyone to take their HIV test. I wonder if it's every bit as good as the COVID-19 test. After all, that's a pretty low bar. And Dutch researchers announced they had discovered a concerning new strain of, what, HIV in this case. All this happening at the exact same time that COVID-1984 is starting to fizzle out. But as the Off-Guardian noted, just because they're giving some slack now on COVID doesn't mean the agenda behind the mass lockdown and poison plandemic is gone. Far from it. In fact, even as they seek to dump this plandemic in a shallow grave, they're already prepping the public for the next booga, 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 deadly health scare, AIDS. Now, he goes on to note how over recent weeks, Prince Harry's been making the rounds urging people to take their HIV test. I'm going to skip some of the statistics in here. Suffice it to say, yeah, he makes the point. They're pushing to be afraid, be very afraid of HIV all over again, too. And now those Dutch researchers have discovered a mutation of HIV dubbed the VB variant, which is more infectious and causes more severe illness twice as fast. Wow, they're playing that commercial again. A new improved variant. And they got over 100 cases, even though other scientists are saying, huh, it's actually been around for decades. Now, by this point, folks, for those of you that have read Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s insightful tome, The Real Anthony Fauci, you probably already know what your host is thinking. Gee, that same Tony Fauci has been up to his satanic eyebrows in HIV since he first started making his bones, killing women and children in Africa, and spending hundreds of billions of dollars on building an empire there in the name of, yeah, one more time, vaccine research. Or is it gain of function? Sometimes it's really hard to know what the words mean nowadays. But still, though, says Dr. Mercola, they're pushing the same old party line. The variant moves quickly, so people need to receive whatever treatment we're going to push to them as fast as possible. And to all of this, he continues, we can also add the concern that the COVID-1984 Zyklon B injection may be causing AIDS-like illness by decimating the function of the immune system of those, well, duped enough to allow it. This is not to imply that the shot, he says, is causing HIV or AIDS, rather as a Lancet preprint, which compared outcomes among so-called vaccinated and unvaccinated Swedes found 6 months post-injection, some of the more vulnerable vaccinated groups were in fact at greater risk for symptomatic COVID than their unvaccinated peers. Who could have possibly imagined such a thing? Yeah, well, unless you realize this destroying immune systems. Clearly, says Dr. Mercola, the jabs are making some people more, not less, prone to infection and serious disease rather than less so. And as a 2021 December article posted by the American Frontline Doctors noted, doctors are calling this phenomenon in the repeatedly vaccinated immune erosion or acquired immune deficiency, accounting for elevated incidence of myocarditis and other post-vaccine illnesses that either affect them more rapidly and result in their death or more slowly, resulting in chronic illness, unquote. In other words, he says, they suspect that myocarditis and other chronic health problems so closely associated now with the jabs could be the result of vaccine-acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, now they're calling it VAIDS, which is basically very similar to AIDS. I wonder if that's because Team Fauci, as we actually saw in scientific literature over a year ago, managed to engineer an HIV protein into the coronavirus spike protein as part of the gain-of-function research they were so hot to cover up. And now they're injecting people with the spike protein manufacturing operating system. America's frontline doctors, continues Dr. Mercola, warn that the shots are creating vaccine addicts in the sense that their immune system won't be able to ward off COVID without them, and like a junkie with the continuing string of hits. However, it's still a losing venture as each shot only worsens the immune system erosion, making you ever more vulnerable to all kinds of infections, including HIV. As the Off-Guardian reported, we've already seen a plethora of predictions of increases in strokes and heart attacks, all attributed to very much non-vaccine causes. Everything from increased energy prices to lockdown-related depression has also been blamed. That certainly appears, they note, to be preemptive ass-covering behavior. Oh, and this new variant of AIDS could well be, too. If the COVID vaccines, and they do put it in quotes, cause millions of people to suddenly develop dysfunctional immune systems or some kind of antibody-dependent enhancement, well, it's pretty clear that a more dangerous new strain of AIDS is a pretty good cover story, don't you think? And this, folks, is precisely what your host and just about everybody else that's been warning about what is now at hand has been predicting. And it was certainly an easy one now in hindsight, wasn't it, for over a year now. People are taking the poison poke and the poison poke boosters, and they're dropping like flies, and they need a cover story. And, oh, by the way, if along the way they get to sell more vaccines for a different booga, 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 you're going to die if you don't get it, bioterror weapon, so much the better. It's more CYA and cross my palm with silver, all at the same time. Which brings Dr. Mercola to the punchline. Just what is this massive PR campaign trying to hide? We're looking at a bunch of big puzzle pieces here. One, Prince Harry and others reminding everyone about the importance to, oh yeah, get tested for AIDS. Number two, UK and US governments simultaneously promising to eradicate the scourge of AIDS by fill in the blank. Oh yeah, now it's 2030. And number three, the discovery of a new, more infectious and even scarier, more dangerous strain of HIV. Number four, emerging data suggesting that the COVID jabs erode. Who could have imagined such a thing? Yeah, I keep saying that, folks, because we've been talking about this for over a year now. Erode your immune function. And finally, number five, the theoretical possibility that the COVID Zyklon B injection might raise people's risk of HIV, thus possibly triggering an avalanche. Again, who could have thought it? Answer, everybody that's been paying attention. An avalanche of AIDS cases in the near future. Could the focus on HIV testing, he said, especially in combination with the warning about the new variant, be an effort to hide the fact that the COVID Zyklon B injections, the poison pokes, are destroying people's immune function and possibly promoting the very same HIV, or is it VAIDS, infection? Or is it maybe just simply destroying people's immune system to the same end? All of this is a possibility, but there's another one, he said. The same week as Prince Harry's media appearance and the publication of the new HIV strain, Moderna, Oh, there's a name you've probably heard, also announced the launch of a human trial for the world's first mRNA, say it with me, folks, HIV vaccine. And the coordination, I'm sorry, the timing, suggests Dr. Mercola, of all these reports just might indicate that there's something more here going on than meets the eye. So let's go right to Bloomberg for the spin. Quote, like Moderna's COVID, not vaccine, they didn't put that word in there, they should have, the shot uses mRNA technology to deliver the instructions for key proteins needed to build an immune response. Yeah, we can reprogram your flawed immune system six ways to Sunday. Back to the quote, researchers have spent decades working, and that's a lot closer to the truth than the spirits did it all in one night, working on a possible way to inoculate people against HIV. And mRNA will make it possible to test the theory on human guinea pigs, no doubt, much faster than expected. Folks, if this doesn't raise your hackles, you ain't been paying attention. This work, they claim, should help companies, including the usual list of suspects, most of them with great Fauci connections, including Pfizer, BioNTech, and Sanofi, all accelerating their own efforts to design and test mRNA vaccines on a massive bunch of human guinea pigs, by the way, to understand when the technology can and can't, and the failures will probably end up dead, but who cares, make a difference in disease prevention. Anybody still actually believe that? Your host has made no secret of my opinion. I think this has always been about killing masses of people. Still is. But yeah, they note, creating an mRNA vaccine for HIV, and they've been working on it for decades, is trickier than making the kind of SARS-CoV-2 shots we've become familiar with and poisoned with. Good grief. I don't know how much more of this I can stand. But one thing's for sure, Dr. Mercola's right. They're certainly pushing the next poison poke. And they're dead set on covering up the genocide from round one in the process of injecting people with round two to boot. As he comes to his conclusions, however, Dr. Joseph Mercola also points out that the parallels between the infamous Tony Fauci's AIDS campaign back in the 1980s and COVID are so strikingly similar, it's almost like he's been repeating things from a handbook. In the 80s, Fauci pushed the deadly drug AZT, which was also tested on innocents without their knowledge in so many cases, as the only permissible way to treat AIDS. And during the COVID pandemic, Fauci's failed and lethal Ebola drug called remdesivir also got the green light at the expense of far safer treatment alternatives and has no doubt killed a whole lot of people as well. Fauci is the connecting link, too, between the COVID shots and the HIV jab, as he's been pushing oh so eagerly for a transition from conventional actual vaccines to this new mRNA gene modification platform. As recently as October 2019, he participated in a panel discussion about how this transition might be achieved in light of regulatory hurdles and public distrust of gene transfer technologies. Oh, I know. Let's just mandate it and then lie about it and force it down their throats and into their arms, whether they like it or even know it or not. Fauci acknowledged it would be indeed very difficult to change people's perception about vaccines. In this case, he was referring to the flu vaccine. And his advice was, do it from within and say, I don't care what your perception is, we're going to address the problem, unquote. In other words, bend over, because whether you like it or not, you're nothing but a slave. And it's your body, my choice. Writes Dr. Mercola, perhaps a bit more charitably, nor does Fauci care about public perception. He doesn't care who he hurts either. He didn't care about AIDS patients back in the 1980s. He doesn't care about COVID patients today, because if he did, he'd insist on doctors using whatever actually works, not just products he's personally vested in and getting huge kickbacks from. And finally, Dr. Mercola adds this. An odd coincidence here is the unexpected death of Dr. Luc Montagnier, who, together with Harold Zurhausen and François Barré-Sinoussi in 2008, won the Nobel Prize for Physiology or Medicine for the discovery of the human immunodeficiency virus, a.k.a. HIV. And Montagnier, age 89, died February the 8th this year at the American Hospital of Paris, and no specifics about the cause of death have been released. Although it's true, Montagnier was an outspoken critic of the COVID-1984 poison Zyklon B poke from the very start, and he also suspected that SARS-CoV-2 was genetically engineered because of the spike protein shared similarities with, guess what, HIV. And I guess he ought to know, or at least he did, while he still drew breath. So again, folks, one thing is for sure. The remarkable connections between the engineered virus, the bioweapon, and the mandated poison poke, which seems to have a possibly intended side effect of destroying people's immune systems, and AIDS, or at least the vaccine-induced variety, may, in fact, be more than a casual coincidence. But what do you bet none of the waste-stream media ministries of propaganda are going to admit that connection any more than they are how many people are already dropping dead from the biggest mass medical experiment, so far anyway, in human history. Think of it this way, folks. If World War III doesn't end up killing enough people to suit the globalist depopulation agenda, well, I guess that's what gain-of-function research, still continuing, and accidental lab releases are for. What do you bet the vaccines, though, have already been patented?